HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 147, recorded live Wednesday, January 21st, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with developer Noah Richards about the new WPF-based text editor in Visual Studio 2010.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm up here hanging out for a couple of days on the Redmond campus of Microsoft. I come up here every month or so and wander around the hallways, and every once in a while I just pop into an office and find out what someone's working on. And I've hit the mother lode today because I'm talking with a software development engineer, Noah Richards, who's one of the, how many developers?
About eight developers.
Eight developers working on the new editor for Dev Visual Studio 2010.
Yes.
We don't call it Dev 10, we call it Visual Studio 2010.
We call it Dev 10.
But you call it Dev 10. But you, the listener, you don't get to call it that.
No.
So why would I want to talk about a text editor? Well, I think this is pretty interesting, and I wanted to talk to an actual. You said you called yourself earlier a lowly.
Yeah, I'm just one of the lowly coders, code monkeys, as they say.
So you work on the WPF editor. So this means that the editor in Visual Studio 2010 is different, and we've seen things about this. And if people are enthusiastic, they can search around, they can find Channel 9 videos, they can piece together what's going on here.
Yep.
What's happening with the editor, the text editor in Visual Studio 2010?
So for Visual Studio 2010, we started over, and we wrote the editor from the ground up with extensibility in mind. And so like you said, the editor, it uses WPF now, which is, of course, different. And we're all managed code. We write almost entirely in C#. And we use something called the Managed Extensibility Framework, MEF.
Yeah, Glenn Block Smith.
Yep, Glenn Block Smith.
Love that guy.
For our extensibility story. So, you just want me to hop into these, maybe talk about...
Yeah, I mean, I want to understand, like, a couple of things about this editor. So when we say the editor, we're talking about all of the typing of text, the rendering of text, the scroll bar, that whole kind of area that lives inside of Visual Studio.
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
So somebody is looking at a Solution Explorer, and they double-click on a file, and somehow Visual Studio decides that this is a file that you're going to be handling.
Yep.
And then what happens? Is the text editor, is it a DLL? I mean, I imagine it from the point of that I've got the Visual Studio IDE open, I double-click on a CS file.
Sure.
And what happens?
So there are two pieces to the editor. There's what we call the platform piece or the rehostable piece. And you might have noticed if you use Expression Blend or if you downloaded the new Win7 beta and you open up the PowerShell ISE, the integrated scripting environment, you'll see that's our editor in both applications. That's our editor. And we're kind of being hosted in more than that. Those are just the ones off the top of my head. But
and that's just like a DLL that they kind of like copied local?
It's a set of DLLs.
Okay.
It's about, I mean, there are a couple separated for various reasons, but there are a couple DLLs. And then inside of Visual Studio, we have a package that takes care of loading us up and then provides what we call a shim layer on top of our rehostable part that allows old native clients to continue calling the editor as if it was still the old editor.
So the shim is it's just that. It's a lie that makes – it's iExtensibility 2. It says, I'm still here. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, it's IVS text whatever, IVS. Yeah,
some COM thing.
Sure. Right. And then there are two parts of that. There's the integration piece, which talks to VS. And then there's the shim piece, which is, like you said, is the lie that we tell to our older native clients. But it's there so that you have a more gradual path to move forward.
Right. So this doesn't necessarily – so rewriting an entire editor doesn't necessarily break some add-in that I wrote earlier.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, that's cool. So I double-click on the CS file. Visual Studio says, hey, it's text editor time. Your package shows up, and then there's a lot involved here. There's the deciding of the viewport, you know, whether this is a really long file or not. Maybe this is a megabyte of text. So there's memory management in text, in dealing with the text editor. There's all the syntax highlighting. Is that your responsibility too?
Part of it. So we still use the language services that are provided, like the C# team as our language service and the VB team. We have a subsystem that they talk to, and that's how they provide coloring. And that's also new in VS 10. We use something called classification, where people get to provide things and they say, this span of text is a keyword. This span of text is a number.
What's that word you're saying?
Classification.
No, this, you said this band of text?
Span.
Span.
Sorry, span of text.
Okay. That's what you call it.
This span of text is such and such a thing. And then we have another service sitting there which says, oh, well, keyword is equivalent to this WPF solid color brush. Mm-hmm. And then that comes in the top in the UI layer and says, oh, keywords are blue.
Now, these services, you're calling them services. So you have like a service-oriented architecture. But this is all in proc, though.
Yes, yes. It's all in proc. So, okay. So yeah. So at the level of MEF, of this extensibility framework, we have all these different subsystems that sit. Classification is one of them. Things like the little squigglies you get in the editor, that uses another subsystem to do that. And basically, we have these services that we provide, and we use them internally to build the application, but they're all public. They're all services that you, as an extender, can come in and say, well, I want to provide my own squiggles, so you can implement this interface.
Okay.
And so one of the things about the new editor, I like to think of as kind of democratizing it, that you can write an extension that adds new colors to C# and plays along with the C# language service. You could add an extension that say you want to add spell checking to comments. You can do that. You can write an extension that's spell checking and then puts a squiggle under the spell check, under the misspelled words, and that would all just work.
Okay, so then maybe I wasn't thinking about this right. Let's think about it in terms of a line of text.
Sure.
Okay, so I mean, I've got a line of text, right? I've got a, you know, for loop or something like that. How many different things are involved in the ultimate rendering of the correct colors, a couple of squiggles on the single, what you call a span of text?
Right. So, okay. So
what's the life cycle of that span?
So there are three primary layers to the editor. There's the data layer, which is text buffers. And then when I say things like span, there are things called spans and so on and so forth. And these refer to text in the text buffer. And I'll pause for a second because I do want to say one of the cool things about the new editor is that all the data structures in the buffer level are functional, are immutable. So when text changes, the text at any point in time is what's called a text snapshot. And you can grab this text snapshot, you can do stuff with it. Like if you're a language, you can build an AST, you can, you know, see what's there without worrying about anybody else coming in and changing it. So one of the things is there's not a lot of locking anymore. You don't have to lock, get a read lock, read the thing, make sure nobody edits it. You just grab this snapshot. When somebody makes a change to the buffer, we generate a new snapshot and then move forward to that. And if you ask for the current snapshot at that point, you'll get the new one. But so almost all of the world of the editor talks in terms of these snapshots.
So you're getting around the issues of concurrency that with just the issue of you're getting a moment in time.
Right. And this was a huge problem. Well, I don't know about a huge problem. It was a problem in Visual Studio Past where language services and consumer, like third-party extenders had to do this too. If you wanted to get a copy of the text, you would take the entire text buffer and copy it into a string and look at it yourself just so you wouldn't block the text.
Right. And that's where you'd see things like, you know, a 5-megabyte file might be fine, but then as soon as you put on, you know, Fred's third-party extension, things start to slow down.
Right.
Turns out he's not dealing with that size of file very well.
Well, and it was hard to do. It's a little bit easier to do now.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this, that's the data level. And above that, we have the logic level where things like classification live. So it's something that classification isn't really a UI concept. It's something that you add on top of the data. So just the fact that the text is a keyword has nothing to do with the fact that it's blue. That comes later.
Oh, I see. This is metadata.
It's just metadata that you add, and we have basically two subsystems that kind of talk in terms of this classification, and another one called tagging, which is similar. It's a way of saying, like, this piece of text is a squiggle. That's a type of tag that you get to put as an error tag. And then on top of that is the UI layer, and that's the layer that we have an implementation of this layer. It's kind of agnostic, so you can have UI without knowing that it's WPF.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a UI-specific one, and so when you have a line of text, all the text view, what it does is it gets the current snapshot when the snapshots change. It goes through and it goes into WPF and renders some of this text. And then it asks for all the classifications over it, asks for all the different tags over it. There is like squiggles. There's a thing called a squiggle visual manager that...
Okay, so then at the second layer, at that what I'm calling this metadata layer, you call it the data layer, that's where things like... things like background compilation of, you know, errors that have showed up, spell check. That's where I hook in, where I'm saying that this is wrong. I want a squiggle there to indicate something about this. But not necessarily saying I want a visual squiggle. I want to tag this with the information.
But you say this is an error.
This is an error. And then visualization of that error is a totally separate thing.
Right. We try to keep that separate as much as possible just because it makes things cleaner and easier to work with. And so that's the logic layer.
Okay.
We call it.
So when I heard that we were writing the whole thing over again, like you said at the beginning, it's been done from scratch. It looks the same though. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I saw the CTP and then and it's like, oh, we're doing all this work. It's totally written from scratch and it looks exactly the same. And there's always that, you know, that joke about rewriting stuff and you get exactly where you were a couple of years ago. So here we are. It looks exactly the same.
Yep.
And we did this though. It was extensibility.
Yes. So the way we look at it is that we want it to be extensible. It's very extensible and it's built so that you can do wherever your mind takes you. You know, you can build a visualization in WPF that does whatever you want it to do. But in terms of when we talk about Dev 10 and delivering and shipping in Visual Studio, we had a priority that we certainly didn't want to degrade.
Sure.
The experience. And so we tried very hard as best we could without sacrificing anything to maintain the same type of, you know, functionality that you're used to, so that a guy who sits down, he just got VS 2010 or no, his company just switched to VS 2010. He go types in the editor and doesn't need to know that it's a different editor.
So he's not going to notice the difference if he doesn't actually go looking for anything.
If he doesn't have anything else, he might notice. The one thing everybody notices is that the selection box has a gradient in it. That's one of the only visible things. Like the outlining might look a little bit different. Some of the, you know, the glyphs,
the graphics
might look a bit different, but the functionality we're trying to maintain.
Not trying to freak people out with some dramatic change. Right. But you said that earlier, speaking of freaking people out, you said you could do whatever you want as far as your imagination. I mean, what are some of the wacky stuff that people have been writing to see how far they can push this?
So we had, there was a guy on one of our partner teams who he built visualization that he used some of the existing Visual Studio stuff to figure out where methods were. And then he made it so when you clicked on the method, it would highlight the method and then pop up this rich edit control that says, you know, like who last edited the method and code coverage numbers. And
wow.
I mean, the data for his presentation was all made up. But the idea is that at the end of the day, the view is just a WPF element. It's just a UI element. And you can hook into the editor at various levels. And like you said, one of the things you can do is that you can provide these error tags. But then at the top, you can provide any type of visualization you want. So we've had ideas for things like, let's pretend every time you say new solid color brush, we replace whatever is in that constructor, solid color brush, with a color picker. Like we can do that. We can stick it right in the editor. Like you could write that. You can write things that say.
Okay, so hang on a second. Because we've said new solid color brush before, but you're saying that you're writing some code. You're sitting down and you're going, you know, var b equals new solid color brush, open paren, and at that moment
you could write an extension that does any of this stuff. You could write an extension that says you create a UI element. Well, why don't we just show it in the editor? You can write an extension
a swash of the brush.
Sure, you can write an extension that effectively takes some piece of the editor and says, well, I want to represent it this way instead.
Hi, this is Scott coming at you from another place in time. Are you looking for an object relational mapping tool for mission-critical projects using Link and .NET? I wanted to share with you Genome. It's specifically designed for developing .NET Enterprise applications. Genome is a mature Link-integrated ORM tool. It's been employed in numerous large-scale projects over the last 6 years. Genome was created for the .NET platform as opposed to being a port from Java, and it's thrived on platform innovation since .NET 1.0. Genome has supported Link since its CTP release in May of 2006. It offers several unique features, such as encapsulation and reuse of link queries and expressions. You can really fully harness the power of link while benefiting from your database platform's unique features. Compose complex link queries, decompose the query logic in your domain model. Link supports all the major database platforms you find in enterprise environments like SQL Server, but also Oracle and IBM DB2. You can find out more about how Genome integrates tightly with Visual Studio and what tools Genome offers to reduce development time at tinyurl.com/trygenome, G-E-N-O-M-E, where you can also download a free and fully functional trial version. I hope you enjoy it.
So how do I get the notification? It's one thing to describe the different layers that you just said,
sure.
But it's another thing to be notified that it's really my opportunity to jump in.
Well, so this is why we have... So we kind of separate these MEF components into two things. There are services that we kind of provide. So there's like a find service and a search service. And then there are extensions that will go and like grep over these people who provide these extensions at various points in time. So classification is one of those. Every time a view comes up, mm-hmm. we'll go in and we'll say, okay, well, this is a C# file. Let me find all the people who say, well, I provide classification for C#. Likewise, you can say, well, tell me every time a view is created and the content type of the thing is VB, or the content type of the thing is C#. And then you can sit and you can listen to, oh, the buffers have changed. Oh, the view has changed. Do I want to do,
you just subscribe to events at that point.
You just subscribe to event. You say, just let me know whenever things happen. And then I can decide, do I want to add my thing here? We have this general idea of things called adornments, which are these UI things. And you can say, oh, well, I want to put this adornment here. I want to put, think of like the three dots for when you are, when you have collapsed text in mm-hmm. an outlining region. That's just an adornment that we stick in the text. And you can write that. And in fact, with the way outlining works, you can replace that if you don't like that three dot. Or you can provide your own outlining regions, because outlining is yet another one of these things that under the covers uses these logic subsystems, tagging, and I can go in and say, well, in my C# files, I want to be able to collapse such and such a thing. So you write a component that whenever C# files open up, you say this region is also collapsible.
And I'm starting to think about what kinds of things that someone could do if they were designing like a language, but they knew that an editor that was extensible existed ahead of time, like, multi-dimensional arrays are no fun.
Of course.
Right? But tiny Excel spreadsheets embedded in your editor are cool.
Sure.
So why not do that? It'll be interesting if third parties jump in and decide to like make the VS super crazy power pack thing. You know, remember when debugger visualizers came out and everyone went just, nuts coming out with all sorts of visualizers for uh-huh. things. They can do the same thing now.
So the reason why I get so excited about the new editor is because we talk about the editor is public surface area. It's not like there are these magical things that we use underneath and those are the powerful things. And then we show you some little pieces at the top, mm-hmm. right? We implement everything. Like you can write a classifier. We write classifiers. It's all the same. You write a tagger for something. We write a tagger for something.
I mean, because you're using MEF now. I mean, you really can't hide anything.
So, I mean, there are some things that are implementation details of something or other, but you can provide any extension that we can provide. Mm-hmm. You can consume any service that we consume. And every one of our pieces are designed in this way, in that something that uses classification, it's not part of classification. It consumes the classification service and uses mm-hmm. it. So everything is very loosely connected in that way.
Now, I mean, this is random, but how long have you worked here?
About a year and a half.
Okay. So let's just phrase it this way. You're not an old dude.
Yes.
And you're not an old dude, not just in age, but in that kind of like been here for 20 years, yeah. kind of old dude kind of a way.
Certainly.
And you're on a team, you said, there's seven or eight people who work on the editor?
Devs.
There's probably devs rather.
Yeah, there's probably, I feel bad if I give the wrong number of people.
Seven or eight, ballpark, a handful of devs.
There's probably about 20 people total. Project managers, yeah. developers, testers that work on the editor. Mm-hmm.
And are they mostly newer Microsoft employees or are they old dudes?
We got one guy who got his 15 year not too long ago, but other than him, it's mostly
okay.
a bunch of young guys. We got one I mean, our architect who playfully refers to me as the one of those open source communists.
Yeah, and see, this is what I was kind of going at. Is that this all this stuff about like, oh yeah, let them go nuts, total extensibility.
No,
seems kind of not Microsofty.
And so I've heard that.
I mean, I'm not trying to. When I say old, I want to make sure that the listeners understand. When I say old dude, I'm not talking about old in age,
right?
Or even old in seniority. I'm talking about old in mind. Right. I've met a lot of 23-year-olds that were old in their minds.
Right.
You know what I mean? But this seems to be a very relaxed and mellow, like, oh yeah, let them have that as an extensibility point.
No, you would be surprised. I mean, so people are really excited about the community that we can create from this, about letting people have the power to create whatever they want and not restricting them. And I mean, our partners tell us the same thing. Our partners outside of Visual Studio, like Blend, like they Blend and PowerShell, they tell us, you know, they love that they can just, they can take this editor and mold it into whatever they want it to be.
Well, you know, I think about, you know, my good friends at like DevExpress, like Code Rush.
Uh-huh.
And Code Rush has been doing like what I can only describe as impossible stuff.
Yes. Oh.
For like, you know, you know, half a decade with the old editor. And when the new editor came out, I was like, oh no, what does this mean for Code Rush? I'm starting to realize more and more as I dig into it that they're going to be able to go bonkers.
So, and we've been working, with all these great companies that are making these. And like you said, it really is, the things they do are really, they're impossible. The hoops, the hurdles they have to jump over.
Yeah, to do it now.
To get what they have to do for some of the, like the really cool visualizations. It's painful. And, you know, we showed them this stuff and, personally, I was wondering the same thing. Are they going to be
mad at us, that
we're making it so easy? But no, they come around and they're like, this is, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard from various people, you know, it's so much fun to work with. It's so much easier.
Yeah.
They love that it's managed code. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those.
And like you said, and it's as fast as it was before. I mean, people still years and years later think that managed code can't run fast.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just, it's not the case anymore.
I remember one of the things that I wrote when I first got here was a differencing service. So we have a generalized differencing service, and we do this text differencing in the editor for various things. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it in C#, and a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, well,
yeah,
it's managed code. It's going to be horrible. And comparing it against like the GNU, you know, diff, it's a little bit slower because startup costs for .NET. But man, it's really, there's not a lot of difference once you get into it.
Now, one of the other things I wanted to ask is that, you know, how do you develop an editor in the same editor? I assume, are you using Dev10 to develop Dev10?
Yep.
Do you have like host applications that host this thing, or do you have two versions of Visual Studio running at the same time?
I mean, we have test harnesses type things that, like I said, because it's rehostable, we can run it. But because we rely on, like I said, these language services that have to be in Visual Studio, they depend on the Visual Studio ecosystem. We do have to test a lot of our stuff in VS. So it does get hairy when somebody checks in the thing that breaks the whatever and now you can't use it anymore. But we try to be pretty good about making sure that we maintain quality. I mean, so one of the things we care a lot about is unit testing and code coverage on the editor team.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we get our daily code coverage builds, and it's important that we keep it at a certain level, and we get a lot of benefit out of that.
Test-driven development? Do you write your tests first? Do you feel bad?
No. Well, I was trying to think if anybody, I mean, individual people might.
You know, the whole like, you know, watch it fail.
Yeah.
And then fix it, and then watch it succeed.
I don't know. I'm trying to think anybody individually. I don't think anybody individually does that, but we do spend a lot of time on it, and because a lot of our stuff is functional data structures is immutable, it makes unit testing a lot easier because you have to worry less about it. So when we get into testing the interface, user interface testing, and this integration testing, it gets a little more complicated. But when we're testing like the buffer and snapshots and all these other things we built down there, and there's a wealth of things that we've built down in our data level, for people to discover, but it's so easy to test because it's just functional immutable data structures.
Now, how often are your tests really unit tests versus integration tests or orchestration tests where you've got a bug, but it only happens when you've got these subsystems all working together and you bring it, you know?
Part of the nice thing, again, about being functional and immutable is that our unit tests are a pretty good coverage of what's going to happen even when you integrate.
Really?
So we do have, we do have integration tests that effectively do the, make sure that when the selection moves here and you press delete or you press whatever, that all these things happen and all these subsystems work together.
Right.
And make sure that this text turns blue when whatever, but we don't rely on those heavily. We rely mostly on our unit tests to tell us what's going on.
Do you test those kinds of things, like the example you just gave? You know, hit delete, this turns blue, hit delete again, it turns black. Is that something that you can test at the data layer of your three layers, or do you actually have an orchestration and you watch it happen on the screen and you're, you know, an invisible hand is typing delete?
We can test. So we do. Some of our UI tests do bring up UI, and you can see, like IntelliSense, right?
Yeah.
It opens up the thing and you can see the drop down open up. Our data tests test our data things. We can test at the logic level. We can test that classification does what it says. We can test that you have three classifiers and they all provide things. And at the top of all of these buffers, it comes out the way you expect. And then at some level, the UI on top of that is just, you know, we test to make sure that the translation from classification type to classification format, this WPF thing, works. And you stick it all together and it works.
You think you have thousands of tests at this point? How long does it take to run all the tests?
To run all of our unit tests, maybe 10 minutes.
Okay, so there's a lot of tests.
Yeah.
It's not like you don't build test, because it takes 10 minutes to run them all.
Right. I mean, so we can, because everything is very localized, we make a change to classification, it's really easy to run the classification unit tests.
Mm-hmm.
The editor unit tests and integration tests, and we split them out separately too. Like, we have text tests and language tests, mm-hmm. and various levels there. Probably about 10 minutes, yeah.
Okay. I got a couple more questions just as we wrap up here. So what did you work on today? Like, what code did you write today, or what did you fix today?
See, I fixed two different bugs, and recently I've been working a lot on performance.
Okay.
So a lot of profiling and trying to figure out, making sure, like I said, that we maintain your expectations.
Uh-huh.
In Visual Studio 2010.
And are those expectations like things like, I opened a 55 meg text file and it was slow? Is it that kind of thing?
Sure, yeah. Those are large file scenarios are absolutely some of the things that we look at. And we're very careful that the relative performance of some component isn't relative to file size. It's either relative to what's visible or relative to what changed or relative to things like this. A lot of it is just, you know, trying to localize and minimize the impact of various actions that you take in the editor.
Very cool. And I assume that there'll be like a whole, at some point in the future, there'll be a whole SDK, and anyone who's interested in this can get involved and people can start writing.
Oh, absolutely.
Plugins
and
stuff.
And like you said, for, you know, if you get the CTP, you can, I mean, the editor's there now.
Okay, so they can start, and then it was using MEF in the CTP, so
yep,
you can start doing that now.
You can use MEF to start building your own extensions. We have some samples in there, so they show you.
Oh, really? You have extensibility samples already in the CTP?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have various things. I know one of the things we showed, one of the apps we built, is a differencing application where it shows it's an inline difference, so, you know, difference two things, and you can edit it and type in it, and you get all of your, you get IntelliSense, you get
inside,
in the middle of your diff. You get it all like that. So, I mean, something like that's a little more complicated, but these are all things that we absolutely want people to download and try.
Yeah.
Like, for me, that's the value of a platform, is how much it enables people to build on it.
Yeah, see, I've always wanted to have, my buddy of mine named Travis built a thing called Documenter that basically takes the XML help and shows you what it would look like if you ran it through like NDoc or Sandcastle.
Uh-huh.
I've always wanted to have a rich text MSDN style editor overlaid over my XML docs. So I would just type it and then it would just make the right XML underneath.
Absolutely.
Totally something.
That's something, in fact, that's something like people here have been like, this is something we need to do.
Really?
This is something we should play with. I mean, people here, we have these application building weeks and people just get so excited. Like, think about the cool things that you can build now that you don't have to worry about.
Yeah. It's nice to look at an API and not go, oh man, I can't do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But to see a whole object model, a series of subsystems, a nice plug-in management system like MEF. I think I'll have Glenn Block on the show next, and he can talk about MEF. Has it been fun working with MEF?
Yeah. I mean, so we've gone through a few different like component systems as they've been building.
So MEF. They rev MEF, they push it.
Yep,
to
they
you.
Rev MEF, and we pick it up and we give them feedback, and they're all great guys.
And was that a big deal to say, all right, we're taking a dependency on MEF?
No, from the beginning, the editor has said we're going to be effectively using a component system. We're going to push ourselves into components. We're going to separate as we need to. And so MEF was kind of just the next iteration in the stuff we had been working with for so long.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks so much, Nora Richards, for talking to me today about the new WPF-based editor in Dev 10 in Visual Studio 2010.
Thanks very much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.